You're listening to the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. On this episode, please welcome our guest, Kelly Bailey. Kelly is the director of MZ Open Skills. MZ is a labor market analytics firm, and their Open Skills Library serves as an organic skills language to act as a translator between people looking for work, work looking for people, and educational programs that are looking to connect people to jobs. She's also the host of her own very successful podcast titled Let's Talk About Skills, Baby. Now, let's get to it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Joe Salustio.
This is Elizabeth Leiber.
And on the line, we have Kelly Bailey. Kelly, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, thank you. And before we get started, you know, at the beginning of every episode, we are still living in the world of COVID-19, whether we like it or not. How are you? How's your health? How is your family and friends doing? You know, give us just a heads up on how you're doing.
Yeah, of course. And thank you so much for asking. We're really fortunate here, family and friends, everyone has stayed healthy. I'm in New Jersey, so it's been, you know, the New York metro area, definitely been more of a hotbed than some other locations. So things are just starting to really, you know, the reopening, I guess, if you will. But everyone, still our governor has everyone being very careful.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to see how every state is handling this. I'll tell you what, my kids are tired. That's two little kids. They're tired of quarantine. I'll tell you that. Going bananas.
I hear you.
But you know, Kelly, like I think the first part is for you to talk a little bit about yourself, your role at MZ, what you do there, and give us an overview of the organization as a whole.
Sure, of course. So I am the director of MZ Open Skills. Essentially, it's for people that are not familiar with MZ, because some people are not, it is a labor market analytics firm. Open Skills, I know that sounds a little interesting. People probably are also wondering, well, what is Open Skills? So Open Skills and my focus here is just really our open or organically open library of skills. We call it a skills language. And essentially we have it and we set it up and we opened it up because we wanted it to be able to act as a translator between people looking for work, work looking for people, and educational programs that are looking to connect people to jobs.
Okay, so maybe go a little bit more in depth into that piece. So it's connecting skills where you're looking at jobs, assessing what skills are needed in those jobs, and then connecting them with educational institutions or with any institution that offers any level of training.
Well, it could truly be any learning provider. Here at MZ, we probably tend to focus a little bit more on higher education institutions, but we do work with all. So let me back that up for a minute and I'll explain really quickly. So in terms of our environment or our economy when it comes to hiring, right, we typically, jobs or job postings or employers tend to talk about the skills they need, right? People tend to talk about the skills that they have on either their resumes or their social media profiles. But learning content has not always really talked about skills, at least the skills from a labor market perspective, if you will. So this particular library was built organically off of looking at what skills employers are talking about on hundreds of millions of job postings, as well as what skills people, or what we might call in higher ed, lifelong learners, talk about on their resumes and social media profiles. And in looking at this organically, we essentially were able to create, so most of us are familiar, right, when we talk about education courses, that we talk about zip codes and how we match up zip codes to a potential occupation or industry, and how a person might try to identify based on this, you know, this degree that they have or this certificate that they have, how they might try to translate that into what an employer is looking for. So I tend to refer to it almost as this game of telephone that was happening. And so this particular library, the reason that we created it and we founded it upon the way that the labor market talks, the labor market and people in the labor market talk about skills, was so that the hope being that that system in terms of hiring and learning could work better together, so that schools could really start to understand what skills am I teaching, so that not only, you know, I want my students to understand their return on investment, but I also want them to be able to get a job, right? Isn't that true success for students these days?
Definitely.
Yeah, I think you're no doubt about that. You know, I think, you know, how many millions of people do we have out of work now? You know, I think when I look at your company and the product and what you're providing, I'm going, okay, this is great, right? People are going to need to upskill, but with what? For what jobs? Do we even know what jobs will be available? I mean, how do you? What work are you doing internally there to really assess the marketplace right now? And how do you look at COVID-19 and try to understand what happens at the end of all this and what the economy looks like and how you can contribute to rebuilding?
So true. I mean, we are always analyzing job postings every single day. So we are seeing a serious downturn recently. But, you know, every week we have this wonderful woman on our marketing team, Meredith Mester, that has a video where she's describing sort of what the job counts look like this week, what's going on in the market, just keeping people aware. And we also have up, well, not only do we have up a number of free COVID resources, but we decided to go ahead and open up a free jobs dashboard so that everyone can really understand in their state what's happening at any moment in time in terms of what jobs are available. And of course, we're noticing, right, that there was a downturn, there's an upturn, but there's some serious adjustments that are happening. And it's really day to day. Like, I don't think we will fully know what this will end up looking like. But it's something that we can keep tabs on all the time. And there are a ton of free resources that we've worked on internally at MZ here to push out and help people try to keep their finger on the pulse.
Sounds great. Liz?
Yeah, this really great value here, because this is a ongoing issue and conversation we have year after year in higher education. Obviously, we all know that we're going through COVID-19, and there have been some initiatives and policy by the government to try to alleviate some of that stress. I know my student loan payments were postponed until September. I was very grateful for that. Yeah, it was a part of the CARE package, the CARE Act that was passed. So that's an ongoing issue with graduates, you know, the workplace readiness issue, the student loan debt issue, making sure, and I saw from some of the services and analysis that you provide, making sure that students are getting value. And that's a part of something we struggle with in higher education, the trust factor. And we're struggling with it now with classes going to online and students feeling like, well, am I getting my money's worth? What are some of the things that, in terms of your analysis and how you've been able to take a look at the market, what are some of the things that employers are saying that are the most important? And like Joe said, this is probably going to evolve after COVID, but some of the discussions that we have in a higher ed circles, and we're not, obviously, we're not necessarily employers, or we're not hiring someone, so maybe we don't know or understand, but sometimes people say soft skills versus hard skills, or communication, or technology. What are some of the prevalent themes that you're seeing that are the workplace ready skills that are really needed just in general now or after COVID?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, COVID has surely, you know, kind of shaken everything up for everybody, especially in terms of jobs and what employers are looking for. But to be honest, what was happening prior to COVID, especially when it came to education, is still quite prevalent now. So what you referred to in terms of soft skills, you know, some people might call 21st century skills, human skills, whatever you call them. It really has to do with this sort of like foundational base of, I think we here at MZ, we're actually working on a report on resilience skills. And it's really these skills that sort of make a person stand out. And it's just wonderful transferable skills. So it's things that we might all be very used to calling soft skills, like communication, problem solving, critical thinking, things that truly, if you are interested as a potential student going into a bachelor's degree program, you know, a lot of times, and I'm sure you guys hear this all the time with the people you have on your show, this is not new, that there have been plenty of students that are and parents, right, that are trying to decide, well, what is the return on investment for this, you know, education that I'm paying for? And truly, it's really there. I mean, those foundational skills are still super popular. Of course, as we're seeing some changes with jobs, I mean, hospitality jobs are taking a huge hit, retail jobs taking a huge hit. Like, as we start to see how this pans out, we'll see if adjustments are made. But the things like automation, you know, the prevalent things that were happening prior to COVID just essentially lit a fire under what we were already seeing.
Absolutely. And Kelly, in terms of... Go ahead, jump in. I know you want to.
Well, I'm gonna jump in, and I'm gonna ask what I think is a very tough question, and maybe you don't have an answer here, Kelly. But
okay.
Liz and I have talked a lot about, and these are continuing conversations about, you know, how social issues will play and how curriculum looks going forward for schools. When you talk about job skills, though, do you see our current events with what happened? George Floyd wise, and we're talking about social equality. Do those become job skills? Are employers going to be more and more interested in potential employees who have a sensitivity factor, who understand the importance of diversity and inclusion? I think that already exists to some degree, but there's going to be a microscope on it now. Do you foresee that? I mean, maybe if you have a match ball.
Yeah. That's a really interesting question. I mean, I can give you my opinion on it. I would not be able to really, we as a company wouldn't be able to see data fluctuations on those types of skills yet at this point, but I'm happy to give my opinion on that. I'll definitely precursor that this is not MZ's opinion. This is just my opinion.
That's fair.
But my opinion, you know, and as much as I don't want to bundle, you know, COVID and that scenario together, the only reason I'm bundling them together is because there are moments in time that have created a serious shift in the way that we're looking at our world, right? So let's start for one second with COVID. We're seeing what people keep calling this new normal, right? So what in this new normal, people are going to have to come back to work differently. Offices are opening differently. We're already seeing employers asking for the ability to understand exposure to potential viruses, how they will ask employees in the nicest way to, you know, mention when these things happen. How will people social distance at work? All of this new training that they're trying to figure out to, you know, as we sort of come out of this. And I, to be honest, now that you mention it, I could see the exact same thing happening with this scenario as well. Like having people really have a lot more detailed training on diversity, inclusion, like all of these things, I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see employers asking for these things. And or creating their own internal learning and development and training related to those as well.
I guess I wanted to follow up with what Joe said, and I'm glad that you have that opinion. Obviously, that, like you said, that's your own personal opinion, but it's very informed based on your experience. And I'm glad that may be something that, as far as a new normal, that we start to incorporate other skill sets or other areas that really are inclusive of not only healthcare issues. There has been some talk that racial injustice is now a primary health care issue or something that is can be very pervasive in terms of both physical health and mental health. So it's definitely some things that companies, I believe, will have to think about. how do companies in the grand scheme of things and how do, in terms of our response as higher education institutions, how do we communicate that to potential students, to parents, to the new traditional students that are thinking, hey, you know what, I don't know about going, I'm kind of on the fence, maybe I need to return to school. How do we communicate that we are providing them with the value, giving them the outcomes that they will need, and that we're responsive to mm-hmm. these skill sets that employers are asking for?
Exactly. Well, you know, again, going back to this, you know, COVID sort of like lighting this fire, this is not new. You know, really being able, the labor market has been changing. I started working in this field about 17 years ago. I mean, that sounds like a really long time now that I say it out loud. But, you know, this is not new. The labor market has been, you know, not even, I would say slowly, but it's almost every year we're seeing fluctuations happen more quickly. And the educators really being able to sort of keep their finger on that pulse of what changes are happening so that they're always ready for their students, you know, to really communicate back to their students, really also change what they're, adjust and change. I wouldn't say necessarily they're always changing like a degree program per se, but maybe they're making slight adjustments in what they're teaching based on these changes that are happening in the labor market. And to me, I am a huge fan. You know, I actually, you know, I came and joined EMSI for a reason, because I am a huge fan of data informing, and in particular, you know, around return on investment for students. And it was really just because of my own experience as a student that was so prevalent to me. You know, I really wanted to be able to understand where my money was going. Like, was this going to lead to a good job? And what did it look like from there? I don't think those questions have changed in all of these years. It's just that things are moving more rapidly. So, you know, here, you know, I work with a company that provides data for schools to be able to keep their finger on the pulse of what's happening in the labor market at all times. But I truly believe in it too. There's so much power. And it's also, you know, thinking of this, every school and every person, right? We all wish that we could talk to every employer out there and understand and have this conversation with them and understand what they're looking for. It's just not how the world works. So that data gives us the ability to know from, you know, again, hundreds of millions of employers that on any given day, what they're asking for and be able to make those changes. I think there's true power in that, in helping students and helping parents really understand what they're, you know, there at your school for.
How do we get the schools to be responsive, Kelly? How do we, because I talked about, I think I kind of jumped the gun, because I talked about the schools communicating the value, but then how do you, as the organization that is actually the liaison, you're gathering that data from the employer, and then you have to bring it back to the school and say, hey, the employers need this, the employers say that. And me and Joe, we talk about this all the time, that schools are a lot of times a little defensive. They're a lot of times a little resistant. Sure. It's like, hey, this is how we've been doing it and how we've been doing it worked. How do we get them to not only keep their finger on the pulse, that's good, but also make the changes in curriculum, also incorporate internships or incorporate more hands-on practical learning? Some of these things they've been a little slower to do. We saw with COVID, they really responded quickly, so we don't want to be too critical, but not in a pandemic, but just outside of just the workplace readiness and some of the things that employers are saying, hey, we need you guys to have more internships or more practical hands-on knowledge, and the schools are just kind of like slowly responding, but not really actually rolling out these programs that the students really need.
It's a good point, because it is a difficult thing. You know, when these organizations, very traditional, the concept of change, that the needed change management to happen in a school for this, you know, really to be something that they gravitate to, it can't only happen in one place. It has to be really across the institution. I have been so fortunate to work with institutions that are doing this extremely well. And I've been, you know, able to work with them for so many years and see how they really took this to heart and how it's sort of transformed the entire way that these institutions are able to serve these students. You know, here at EMSI, we really try to facilitate, you know, the use of data platforms, but that requires, again, internally them to acknowledge that that, you know, really can help make adjustments. Because we see, and we've been working with schools for so long, we see how difficult it is. We've been working on some really amazing new products and services that are really based on this open skills library that I mentioned to help schools look at this in a totally different way. You know, I think you all might really, you know, you might know this again just from the work that you all do, but, you know, this change, it feels like maybe it's been an extremely slow turtle-paced change at some times to more of a skills-based hiring and learning economy. But when, you know, in retrospect, like we've come so much further than we were in the past. And really to help schools kind of capitalize on this shift and adjustment, we really want to make sure that they're able to talk about themselves and skills, but try to make it as easy as possible for them so that it's not, when you think of change, it's not such a heavy lift.
So open skills kind of supplements, instead of them having to revamp a whole program, they could draw on that and use it to kind of incorporate it into the curriculum without having to do a total revamp.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the two tools that I am, we have like three new higher ed tools that are just so fantastic. Basically the first one is super simple. We just do something that I refer to as like skillifying their curriculum. So essentially we're able to just ingest, let's say if they have like syllabus documents as an example, ingest their syllabus documents and basically just tag this open skills library to their current learning content. The fabulous thing about that is that, of course, they've made no changes, right? But then we also are able to make a comparison of what they're teaching to what companies are looking for. And we refer to that internally here as taught versus sought. But really what it is that ability. So sometimes it's really hard for a school to make a decision on, you know, every school has a different cycle on making a decision to revamp a program, close down a program, open a new program. That's a really hard thing to do, but we're actually able to, once we've skillified their syllabus, you know, their syllabi, we're able to then, you know, basically surface to them in very simple reports, you know, hey, this is based on what you're teaching and based on what's happening in the market, these are some adjustments that you might want to make. And sometimes they're not complete, you know, closures or openings of new programs. Sometimes that allows you, the visibility allows you to make simple adjustments, again, that are faster than you having to go back to like all those boards that you have to go to, right?
Right.
And then the third piece, which is like, man, this is revolutionizing in my mind the way that learning is going to happen in the future, is really a personalized learning and career pathing tool. And we call that Skills Match. And actually, we decided to open up a free version of that resource to folks that are struggling right now on unemployment. And what it allows a person to do, and again, think of this in the context of education, but also in this moment of unemployment, what it allows them to do is understand what skills they have. So I have a different education than both of you. So I may have picked up different skills through that learning experience. And then of course, we've most likely had different jobs through our career. And so we've picked up different skills. So we inventory their history and we understand, we call it a skill shape. Everyone has their own personal skill shape. And we take that skill shape and we look at skill shapes of all of that learning content for that school that we skillified. And we also look at skill shapes of all of the jobs in the market. And we can make connections for them. Basically, it's a match on what do you look like right now? Where are you interested in going? And what is the correct learning that brings you to that next step? And it's a lifelong process because we don't always now go and sit down just for that bachelor's degree. It's a great foundation, but that's not always the number one step. And sometimes even if that is the number one step, we're coming back for learning all throughout our life because of all of these rapid changes in the labor market. You know, once I have that wonderful foundation, I might need to pick up some technical skills, or maybe I've pivoted to a totally new role and I need these other skills. It's a way for a school to really create this relationship with their lifelong learners and give them these very, you know, do you guys know, I mean, I feel like I've been talking about, like our society has been talking about precision medication for so long now. This is essentially precision learning and employment.
Absolutely.
And how's that been going? Have you been putting people through it? And you know, because anytime you automate or use AI, I'm assuming there's some level of AI in there to produce matches, you have to then go back and assess whether the matches that you provided are active. You know, right? You assess, hey, student, does this actually match what you're looking for?
Exactly.
And so you go back and do that level of data analysis?
We have, yes. So we are in the process of testing this with, actually, I forget the latest count of institutions that are testing out this tool with us. And of course, we have up the free version, which I'll do a selfless plug, is on skills.mzdata.com. It's right up at the top. You'll see COVID resources. You just click on fill your skills gap. I mean, we're so happy to take feedback. We're so happy for people to run through it and let us know how they feel about those matches so that we can improve. But that's the stage we're at. You know, we really want schools and students to start interacting with this so we can determine, you know, where to make those adjustments so that AI can just continually get stronger.
What role does, have you seen, and Liz sort of touched on this a little bit, but and, you know, truth told, if anybody who's listening didn't know this, Liz and I are both advocates and Elvin as well of online learning and the benefit of online learning. Are you seeing a shift or do you believe, I mean, I think that's maybe along with the COVID question, you know, the new normal, what level of online learning is going to be included in the new normal? I think that's a higher ed question. And I think that's a general business question. And then the reason I say that is, you know, one of my family members is not returning to work basically until January.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, nope, no problem. Stay home. Not a big deal. You have your setup. You know, we're going to take all those trainings that we've done in person and now we're going to move them all online. We're done with in-person trainings. Right. So what level of embeddedness do you see online learning have in new skills in the world of new skill development?
Yeah, I mean, and again, I'm going to precursor that this is 100% my opinion on this and not MZ's, but, you know, I think in general, the people are really starting to understand virtual capabilities with this moment in time. I have worked from home for, 12 years now. So, you know, and I have 3 children. I've worked through, you know, having kids at home and traveling with all the things, right? And I really think so many other people are starting, I know I've already understood it, but so many, it's like everyone now understands that, wow, you can actually get a lot done and you still have more time with your family. And I know for me, I've been taking online courses since I've been home because I'm not traveling right now. So normally travel takes up a good chunk of my time and I'm able to sort of like fit in. There's been, of course, so many free courses right now, but just like the availability of doing that now, it's fascinating. I've had, you know, some good long chats with people around the concept of like, is our companies going to, and of course there's been announcements, right? Like Twitter, Facebook, Google, how many of them, right? At this point have said, you're working from home for the remainder of the year, for sure. I just think more companies are going to move in that direction. And naturally, as that becomes more comfortable, I just think more schools, more people are going to want to learn that way.
Well, you said it. You said it, Kelly. You said it. To be true, right, Liz?
Yeah, I absolutely. We're huge advocates of online learning and the increasing accessibility. You talked about it. I'm a mom as well, and I've been working from home. But there's something about the ability to just jump online, gather information, learn, interact with other professionals. It just brings a whole new world that can open to students, and a lot of them maybe were not aware of this pre-COVID and now
so
kind
true.
Of put our feet to the fire where, you know, we obviously cannot be in person for the most part, and slowly
right.
society is kind of coming back to interacting, but on a limited basis. So online learning, I agree with you, is definitely something yeah. that is going to be a huge part of our economic recovery moving forward. As far as we talked about these skills and all these different availability of schools to be responsive, what do you, you've gathered so much information, you have so much data, and you have, in terms of the products that you talked about that you offer, I was like, wow, that is so cool, that is so awesome. what do you think is the, well, yeah, for sure. I love that last one you talked about as far as that skills match, and I'm like, I'm going to drop that link down and jump on there myself and see kind of like, you know, what are some of my skills. Yeah, I'm going to definitely let you know what my outcome was. But,
I'm on it right now.
You're on it right now. So when he gets quiet, he's not responding. Kelly, we know what he's doing. He's already doing his little data skills right. match.
He's like, but I'm my skills. It's fine.
Yeah, that's right. But I think it goes a long way to, I guess, what I was talking about earlier is increasing that trust, understanding that the institution and the student, it's not just us regurgitating information that we want to regurgitate to the student. It's more of like a partnership where we're encouraging right. lifelong learning, and we have all these different tools and availability to be responsive to the student needs. So as far as your analysis of the market and your ability to look at all this information, what advice would you give to institutions? What is the biggest thing that they need to do moving forward? Technology is rapidly changing. We have COVID. We have all these different areas that we have to navigate. What can schools do? What's the biggest advice that you give them from the perspective of your company to be responsive and to be there to guide students in the right direction?
Yeah, and I don't think what I'm about to say is revolutionary in any way. Again, this is stuff that has all been brewing for quite some time. You know, going back to that comment I made on precision medicine and precision learning, and especially because the data transparency, you know, students, the data is really moving in the direction. I tend to talk a lot about, and, you know, we are just in general talking a lot about interoperable learning and career records. Have you guys been involved in, you know, chatting about those kinds of things at all lately?
Mm-hmm. Okay, not yet,
it's a super fun topic. But essentially what it is it's almost a living and breathing record of your learning and employment, meaning that, you know, how normally you'd have to go and get like a transcript. Like it all lives in one place.
Right. But that's pretty revolutionary, the idea of that, because schools have always been like the keeper of your transcript, and you can never get your information. You have to jump through hoops of fire to get your grade.
Exactly. And in this case, you know, as we're seeing these shifts happen, like not only towards skill-based hiring, which then in turn is forcing the skill-based learning because people and companies want that, we're also seeing this shift in where the ownership of, you know, that student's data, and it's really in their hands. And so them making these decisions. So when I say I don't think this is revolutionary, this has been going on now, right? So we're seeing the change of understanding what skills you're teaching, that unbundling of, you know, a larger degree into smaller chunks so that, you know, I go back to that. I'm a mother, so it's easier for me to talk about how it's so much, you know, it's for someone like us, right, that we might not be able to go and continue our education through this long degree, but we wouldn't mind if a course that we took every now and then led up to a master's, that'd be amazing, right? But there's so many other people. That's just the mothering part is just my experience, you know.
Sure.
But there's so many people at every different level in their life where, you know, this, I think the fluidity between working and learning is going to really, really shift. And I think that, you know, as we start to see these changes, like the ones that are really, this may be more of a little bit of a personal opinion, the ones that are really going to stand out are the ones that are adjusting early to these shifts. So they're starting to see that people are making learning decisions different, even traditional students. And I can totally not quote where this came from, but I remember reading something to the effect of, the traditional learners are now making learning decisions that look more like what adult learners choose. They don't necessarily choose to go right to college or even go right. for a full bachelor's degree at one time, mm-hmm. Which I find mm-hmm. fascinating. But, you know, if we start to see these shifts and we start to make our adjustments as an institution, I really think that's going to just put you in front of, you know, that. So I would say, like I said, it's, you know, understanding the skills that you're teaching, being able to unbundle, because it's not that the bachelor's or the master's or so on and so forth are, they're very good. It's just not all people look the same. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to prescribe to them what, you know, we need to be able to understand them and be able to offer things that are much more prescriptive, because that's how they feel that partnership. That's how they feel that return on investment.
Absolutely. You were speaking my language, Kelly, because that's what it's all about.
We could probably get together for a few days and have a
lot. I know. We would talk forever because what you're saying makes so much sense. Teaching a student individually, not just like just throwing out a product that may not apply to a single mom that can't get a bachelor's degree, but she wants to upskill and she does know that she needs to get better skills, but she's not right. necessarily able to commit to a bachelor's degree at this
but
time. There's so many different variations.
People. So true. And think about all of these people on unemployment right now. I mean, can they keep not working and go back to school? No, they need a job
exactly.
right now. But they exactly. most likely, like if we end up putting them or helping place them in a job that doesn't have a clear future, they will need learning to upskilling,
right.
to keep moving so that we don't end up in the next recession period or whatever it is that comes our way as an economy so that they don't end up where they are today.
Very true. Absolutely.
Well, Kelly, this has been very informative and we're coming up on time. We want to make sure we're sensitive to your time and we've kind
of
got two final questions for you. And, you know, the first one being, you know, is there anything that you want to say about yourself, your organization, and, you know, that you think would be worthwhile to our listeners? And secondly, more importantly, you touched on it, I think, a little bit through this entire call, through this entire recording is, what does the future of higher education look like in your opinion?
Sure. Okay. So we'll start off with just in terms of MZ, I really encourage you know, listeners out there to definitely check out all of these free resources that we have up. Would love to get more people running through them, would love to get opinions. And of course, if you are at an institution, you know, feel free to reach out. We'd love to help you revamp what you're looking at. You know, and obviously there's a ton of other organizations we work with, but feel free, anyone, to reach out directly to me or through our website. Again, I mentioned skills.mzdata.com. And then going to that last question, Joe, it was just my purview on how the future of higher ed looks, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And I think we really, you know, mainly covered that, but I think the future of higher ed will look much more prescriptive, understanding the different needs of people, that concept of lifelong learning, unbundling so that we can go through learning at the pace that works best for us. And truly that we're understanding and learning skills and being able to really understand the proficiency level of skills that we attain so that we can communicate that back to potential employers and through are hopefully eventually these wonderful records that will exist someday that we own and can make, you know, clear decisions through our entire life cycle on. That to me is really what the future of higher education looks like.
Cool stuff.
Well, thank you, Kelly. This has been great. On behalf of Liz, Elvin, and myself, thank you so much for coming on the EdUp Experience. We appreciate your insights. I know that some of our listeners will check out MZ and the great things that you have going on. And we appreciate all that you're doing for higher education. So thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you guys. This has been a blast.
Well, there you have it, everybody. Kelly Bailey from MC talking about skills-based learning and some of the innovations they have going on there. Liz, what did you think about Kelly's, what Kelly had to say and what she brought to the table?
Really interesting. I mean, it's definitely the ongoing debate, and it's been amplified, I think, with student loan debt and students are looking at ROI a lot more, and trust factor in terms of the decisions that we're making at our institution. So the fact that she works in that data collection and data analysis sector, I think is fascinating, because it gives us that. Sometimes in higher ed, we're making suggestions about things that students need to be aware of, or how we need to prepare them better. And sometimes it's hard to get change to happen. And she kind of alluded to that. And we talk about this all on the podcast all the time. How do we get institutions to turn the boat? And like you said, sometimes it's like walking through quicksand. Is that what you say, Joe? Or I don't even know.
I think I'd say
it's hard.
Trying to get a brontosaurus to move by hitting it in the leg with a stick. You know,
that's really a weird visual, but yeah, exactly.
Right,
so that, yeah, but that's what it is. It can be difficult. So some of those tools that she has and the ability to connect those dots for the institutions, I think is really good. We need to start thinking more, like she said, more prescriptively. We need to think about lifelong learning. We need to think about chunking and doing some different delivery of education in ways that make better sense to our students and serving them in the best way possible. So that really was my biggest takeaway here. We got to think outside the box and be creative.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I think it's truly, you know, we've had several people on the podcast at this point talk about their view on what takes place in our new normal post-COVID-19. I mean, I think ideally if we get a vaccine and everybody's fine, and you know, but obviously the likelihood that there's going to be some level of it around, and we may be wearing masks for a while when we go to public places. Skills are going to be important. And how do you make sure that you're getting the right skill for the job that you want? And so I like the concept of skills matching. I think that's a really important concept. And we've talked about how do you, if you're out of work right now, how do you get the one or two or three skills you need to qualify to even submit your resume for a new job? Right? How do you get those quickly? Where do you go to get them? And so I think there's going to be a gap there, and it sounds like MZ can help fill that gap. So I think that's going to be an important part of higher ed's contribution to economic recovery. So, you know, really interesting stuff from Kelly. Again, Liz, thank you for your insight as always.
Thank you.
We will continue to bring you all as much high quality content as we can going forward. And until next time.
Hope you enjoyed that episode. To learn more about the EdUp experience, please visit edupexperience.com. That's edupexperience.com. And please feel free to rate, review, subscribe, and share this episode. We really, really appreciate your support. You've been listening to The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, with your hosts, Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and Elvin Freitas.